Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning. So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at WLIW.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. And each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com, that's A-N-N-L-I-G-U-O-R-I.com, and distributed on my podcast via Audioboom and iTunes. Well, the popularity of golf has helped every segment of the golf business, seemingly, from golf manufacturers with an assortment of products to aid golfers to competitions such as the World Long Drive Championship. We're going to talk about both of these topics in this show, but recently Netflix announced the Netflix Cup, which will be their first ever live sports event featuring four PGA Tour players competing with four Formula One drivers to take place at Wynn Golf Club in Vegas. This sports event is a direct result from the great success of the Netflix series Drive to Survive, an inside look at Formula One racing, and Full Swing, the Netflix series about several PGA Tour players. Happy to be part of that series. You can see a cameo of me in episode 4, A Full Swing, and then they use a question that I asked Phil Mickelson during the U.S. Open at Brookline in 2022. They used that question of mine in episode 5, so very much delighted to be a part of the first season of Full Swing, and Netflix recently completed season 2 of Full Swing, which will air in 2024. And both of these series, The Drive to Survive and The Full Swing, have brought many, many more fans to each prospective sport, which is wonderful. Another league has also been formed by Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. They have partnered with the PGA Tour to create the TGL Golf League, and that will debut January 9th and air on ABC and ESPN. Now, this league will feature top players split into 6 teams. They will play for apparently 2 hours in a head-to-head match play format in an arena built specifically for this TGL Golf League that is located in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. The matches will incorporate live action as well as the latest golf technology, so it should be really interesting to kind of get a feel for what this will be all about. And there you have owners stepping up from all over the country to buy franchises in this TGL Golf League. And Steve Cohen, the billionaire who owns the New York Mets, he actually bought the founding rights to the New York team in TGL. And other owners are stepping up to purchase their own franchises in this new golf league. So it should be interesting when it all starts. We'll learn more about it as the new year is upon us. And the never-ending talk about the potential partnership between the PGA Tour and the Saudi Public Investment Fund, the PIF, in my opinion, it does not look like it's really going to happen. Certainly not anytime soon. They had previously set an agreement would be announced, a deadline before the end of the year, but recently there have been other investment groups from our country, such as Endeavor Group Holdings and Fenway Sports Group, who have thrown their proposals in to compete with the Saudis to invest in the PGA Tour. And why not? I've always thought an American-based equity firm investment company should really invest in golf in our country. You know, why let Saudi Arabia control golf in our country with their unlimited funds as a sort of cover up for the human rights issues that still exist in their country? And even though the PGA Tour is adamant in saying that even though the Saudi Arabians would come in with $2 billion, that the PGA Tour would maintain control. But I always found that difficult to believe, because if an investor comes in with that much money, you certainly are going to give, they're going to demand a lot more control. So, and you know, the PGA Tour did that 180 with their stance in terms of first being adamantly opposed to the Saudi-funded LIV Golf, and everything that that stands for. And then on June 6, 2023, PGA Tour announced, which was a complete shock to everybody, including the PGA Tour players, that the PGA Tour would partner with the Saudi Public Investment Fund, and that the Saudis would indeed pour up to $2 billion into the PGA Tour. Wow. I mean, that's been the talk of golf, you know, well, first, LIV's been the talk of golf since it started in 2022. And this proposed partnership has certainly taken over the news in the golf world ever since. And well, I do hope that common sense will prevail and that the PGA Tour will come up with other answers. And it looks like they might listen to other proposals from, you know, these groups like Endeavor and Fenway, which I think is truly, truly important. This morning, Zane Smith, the Vice President of Business Operations for GF Sports and Entertainment, he will join me to talk about the World Long Drive Championship, its popularity, and what's all involved in these athletes just crushing the ball off the tee over 450 yards. It's just incredible. And there's a series of these long drive tournaments that are leading to this World Long Drive Championship. And GF Sports and Entertainment have obtained the rights to this World Long Drive series and the championship. So we'll learn all about it from Zane Smith, the Vice President of Business Operations for GF Sports and Entertainment. And Gavin Deer, the Chief Commercial Officer at ShotScope Technologies, he will explain the innovative product line that ShotScope Technologies has, rangefinders, watches, performance tracking technology that greatly aid amateur golfers and coaches. These products are just amazing, so we'll learn more about this innovative technology. Hope you enjoy this edition of Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Gavin Deer, the Chief Commercial Officer for ShotScope, a company that produces advanced laser rangefinders featuring GPS-powered distances with performance tracking technology. And we're going to learn all about it from Gavin, who is from Scotland. Gavin, always great to hear a Scottish accent. Welcome to Sports Interview.
No, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Anne.
Now, the company is based in Scotland, right? And was founded in 2014.
Yeah, so we're based out of Edinburgh, Scotland, currently in LA. And we spend a lot of time over here in the US. Obviously, the US is a growing market for us. In the UK, we are second largest company in golf technology. So spend a lot of time over here. I came to college here. So it's, yeah, it's like a second home.
Where did you go to college?
I went to college at Lynn University down in Boca in Florida. So a bit of a change for a Scottish boy.
Well, I know you're a very accomplished amateur golfer, and you played professionally for a number of years. You played in the 2009 Walker Cup at Merion. You won the 2009 Irish Open Amateur. So you are quite the golfer yourself.
Yeah, the key word there was where. Golf's... yeah, I had a great run, 08, 2009, 10 and 11. I played some really good golf. And unfortunately, I just couldn't get myself to the top tier and become stable there. And to be honest, it then became a question of what do you go on to do? And very fortunate that I've managed to remain in the golf industry rather than, you know, it's, as you'll know, it's a large industry. It's, you know, it's a great industry, but it's hard to get into and understand, especially in Scotland. If you're not going to be involved in golf tourism, it's hard to be in the golf industry. So I'm really privileged to still be working and doing something that around a sport that I love.
Well, before we get more into your work with ShotScope, I understand when you played in the 2009 Walker Cup, Tommy Fleetwood was on your team. That must have been exciting back then. Who knew Tommy Fleetwood, right?
He was, yeah. So Tommy was 18, I think, when he played in the Walker Cup then. He was an accomplished player. It's hard, right? Because you're all there at a level, and you would expect somebody to go on. And on the US side, Ricky Fowler played, Brian Harman played. I think Ricky was the standout golfer out of the 20 players there. But yes, Tommy's gone on to a phenomenal career, and he was young. The thing about Tommy was he was very level-headed. You can still see that in his game today. And he was always asking questions, keen to learn from anybody he could. And that's obviously held him well as he's kind of gone through success in the pro game.
Interesting to hear that about Tommy Fleetwood and of course Ricky Fowler and that US team, that Walker Cup team won 16.5 to 9.5
Yep.
for their third straight win at that point. So it was good memories for the US team, but just the experience overall, especially at Marion. I remember playing Marion the day after the US Open was played there. You know, it's just a tough golf course, lots of rough, and you just have to be on the fairway or it was impossible. I mean, what were your memories of Marion?
So, interest. I mean, the first thing you have is you have the baskets instead of the flags,
I love that.
which throws you off immediately as a golfer. And it's amazing how often subconsciously you look at a flag and you take information in without knowing it about wind direction and strength. For us, it's fantastic to play in front of crowds like that. I think there was about 15,000 people attended. The course, it's interesting you say about the rough. For us, it was hit as far as you could off the tee. The fairways are tight, so it's hard to hit the fairways if you're hitting a long iron or a three wood or a driver. So just hit driver. It was the first time we'd really experienced sort of bomb and gouge, as it became known within the sort of professional game. But phenomenal experience. I was fortunate to play number one both singles days against Brian Harman, and came out with a point and a half against him, which was great. But it was a tough week for the Brits. We took a pretty good beating, but
Yeah, but
I
still, the
loved the place.
memory you play, you
Yeah.
beat Brian Harman, obviously, open champion from 2023, Ryder Cup player. So, what a, that's something you can carry with you as far as a good memory for the rest of your life, really. Well, so what was it like back then as far as gauging distance? Did you use rain finders back then? I mean, I'm interested in hearing what it was like back then and how the technology has improved since.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone through the full cycle. So back in college, you used to have markers that you paced off, and you weren't allowed to use range finders in competition. And now you can play it in amateur competitions, and even at the PGA Championship, it's now you can use. But at the Walker Cup, it was still yardage books, which it's slow, right? And you've seen the growth in GPS or range finders, and they're almost as important as having a driver in the bag now. There's nothing worse than hitting a good shot that's down the flag, comes up 20 yards short, goes 20 yards long, because you were just guessing what club to hit.
Right. So talk a little bit about shot scope and you know, there's just you have a variety of different, you know, range finders, you have the watch, and how the technology has just advanced so quickly in, say, the last couple of years.
So we started the company using shot tracking technology. And in that, what we want to do is, as you would go for a run, and you would time your run, and you would time how many minutes it takes per mile, our shot tracking technology allows you to go and capture your golf game and say, how far did I hit the tee shot, and how close was I to the middle of the fairway, and how close was I to the flag, and all that data that a professional golfer gains. And we initially did that with GPS watches. You can now use our handheld devices, our mobile app, a number of different devices to capture that data. And in the same time, we're a team of golfers. We've expanded. So we now provide range finders that provide GPS as well, and just GPS watches. And we've got a $150 GPS watch that's got 12 different color straps. So you can personalize the color you want. So we've become a brand off the back of shot tracking, but it's still our core USP, if you like, and our core ability to go to a golfer and say, hey, we're wanting you to improve your game, and here's how you can do it utilizing technology.
Right. So the Pro LX Plus is GPS powered distances in addition to artificial intelligence. So that AI, is that something new to this genre?
Yeah, so obviously it's about consistently tweaking the experience. So something I would say is none of our products have subscription, and all of our products we're constantly looking to improve them. And as a user, whether you purchase a watch, for instance, tomorrow or a year ago, you get the same updates for free the whole time through the life of that watch. So as you can imagine, we're getting to a stage with technology that you're like, hey, we've got all this data. How can we start to use AI to say, hey, Anne, you're going out to play at Merrion. Well, in the first hole, you should try and hit this. And can we beam it to your watch so that you can understand if it's a driver or a 3 wood off the first tee and what your percentages are? So that, you know, if you think about, I went out and shot 75 around a golf course, you made 75 decisions on that golf course. What club should I hit? Where should I aim? And we're just trying to make those decisions a little bit easier, you know, trying to avoid a couple of the bad ones. And it's amazing how your score can fall because of that.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so much information that you can get from these devices. You know, again, the smart golf watch with interchangeable straps, as you mentioned, the Pro L2, the Pro LX laser range finders, the tracking tags, ShotScope Academy connecting players with pros and golf and coaches. So tell me, what kind of data can amateurs get from these devices and use to improve their games?
Yeah, so it's all encompassing, and what I would say is within ShotScope, okay, we ran through my golf career and we've got some elite golfers that are in ShotScope, but we also have guys that play once a week or once a month, and we all contribute together because we know that golfers have different levels of understanding of data, so we want to make sure that it's not overwhelming on our apps or our dashboard. But in terms of data, you're going to see overheads of all the shots on the golf course that you've played. You're going to be able to take all that data and understand fairway percentage, green percentage, proximity, club distance, and then you can start to take it and compare it against your peers. So we benchmark, and you can say, hey, well, I'm a 12 handicapper. What does a 10 do? And you can understand, okay, how am I going to improve? Well, my driving's better than a 10 handicapper. My approach plays better than a 10 handicapper, but look, my short game's poorer. So, okay, now you can sit there and say, well, my pathway to improvement is through short game. And we can break that down and say, hey, it's bunker play. We would advise you go and see a PGA Pro and work on bunker play because we know if you can improve that part of your game, your scores will decrease.
I love all that. So take the beginner to this technology to the beginning, and how does that particular, all these analytics, how does all that work? How do you do it?
Yeah, so quite simply, again, we've got different methods for collection on the course, so it can suit the individual golfer. The simplest one is the golf watch, the X5, and where you just put little tags in the top of your clubs and you play, and it'll do all the work for you.
And the tags come with the watch.
The tags come with it. You get 16, so you have some spares. They're all uniquely identified. You put them in, they stay there. There's no batteries.
How do you put them in?
You just screw them into the top of the grip.
Okay.
So, yeah, I become blasé about some of this stuff. So you can do that, or you can take tags at $99 and connect it to the mobile app and just hold it close to your phone and it will record the shot. So
Wow.
there's different ways. You know, we see in the States that usage of golf technology is different to the UK. In the UK, we're much more watch-based. In the US, it's more app and rangefinder based. So we have different methods for collection just to suit the individual golfer.
I wonder why that's the case.
I think historically, that's where, you know, we had watch companies right at the start of golf technology being introduced. And in the States, it was more lasers from hunting that came into golf to gather data. So I think it's historic. What I would say is, watches is the fastest growing segment within technology in the US. And it's because it is so simple. It's always there. You can't lose it. You can't leave it on your golf cart. It's attached to you. The distance is there. It takes seconds. So I think over time it will become more equal.
Yeah, I love the watch, but I also love the range finder because of the magnetic, it can just click on and it holds right onto the golf cart, and it's so easy, and it never, moves. I mean, you just have to remember to take it off when you leave for the day.
Yeah, exactly. And we've added the magnet to our Pro L2, which is a $150 range finder with slope technology. It was my Golf Spy's best value range finder, and we're struggling to keep them in stock around the world. It's absolutely nuts. And again, it just has all those simple features for the golfer that's sort of a weekend warrior. They want to go out and play, and it's accurate. It does everything you can want. So as a brand, we're now positioned that we have a full suite of products, but it's all underpinned by shot tracking.
Right. And this GPS you're talking about, it locks into the pin very easily. And oftentimes it's difficult to focus and get, right onto that pin location with range finders. But the technology has developed that you can really almost hear it locking in to the proper distance, right?
Yeah, and with the L2, we've taken it a step further because it's the entry level product. Using a rangefinder is a skill. Hitting a target from 200 yards is a skill. So with the L2, we changed our technology so that the golfer just holds the button and scans, and the system will automatically find the pin. So you're not trying to hit like a one fire, which is tricky, especially if you've got some shaky hands or you're less experienced with rangefinders.
Definitely. I mean, a lot of times too much coffee is not good when you're trying to
Yeah,
find the pin
co
with your
co coffee or
GPS.
drinking. It depends which way you're going in the course.
Exactly. And so talk a little bit about, the professional game. You did mention now the only major championship that allows caddies to use range finders is the PGA Championship. Why do you think that's the case? Why aren't more majors allowing caddies to use range finders?
Yeah, I suppose it's tradition. And I think golf's at a crossroads, and you can see that with LIV Golf, some of the additions. It's really a crossroads of meeting the future technology with whether it be clothing. A great example is why are guys on the PGA Tour not allowed to wear shorts? It's crazy. Why are they not using rangefinders more or accessing this technology? Because it's accurate, it's quicker. Golf has a pace of play problem, I would suggest, especially at the pro level. And for rangefinder use or GPS use, you as a golfer, you can use it effectively the whole way before you reach the PGA Tour. So college, elite amateur golf, smaller pro events. You can use it the whole way. So I think it's going to come. The PGA Championship was a step forward. It makes sense. The players respond well to it. I think the caddies certainly enjoy it. It's a few less steps every round. But I think you'll see a transition in pro golf, and it's probably to retain audience as much as anything, that adding in wearing shorts, using rangefinders, trying to connect with the golf consumer a bit more and be like what we are on Saturday.
Well, you play professionally and you're a top amateur player and you're in touch with the players and the caddies. Do the caddies really find this technology to be a major advantage, do you think?
I think so. I think you have this juxtaposition. I mean, when you're a professional golfer, the pin distance is important. But it's all about caddies and lines, and it's really mathematics. It's really risk aversion and percentages. So you're looking to try and work out a number to hit the ball. And that could be, hey, I want to hit it 10 yards short of that flag. So from a caddy perspective, it allows them to quickly understand the pin distance. It can allow them to quickly understand distances to carry bunkers. I think you'll always see a want for a yardage book at the PGA Tour level because it's so ingrained. But I think if you asked a caddy, hey, do you want to carry one and have the ability to use it? I think they would all say yes. It's another tool in their toolbox, right?
Sure, and it also tells you the slope, which I think is a big advantage.
Yeah, so you can't use slope in competition.
Oh, okay.
So there's an element there. Again, should that just be opened up? You know, the thing is, you're not allowed to use slope in a competition on a Thursday, but you can have mapped it and taken a note in your yardage book on the Wednesday.
Right. So how do, like, say at the PGA Championship with the your range finders that do provide slope, how can they kind of police that?
So that's a great question. So what we do as a rangefinder company is we submit all our products to the RNA and USGA, and they go through conformance testing. And part of that is when you have a slope button, you must be able to switch it on and off, and you have to have a clear signifier on the side of the rangefinder to say slope is on. It's then obviously a game of honesty. So it's on the golfer to say, hey, I've made a mistake. My slope is actually on. I will have to disqualify myself. And that happens now and again. You'll see a few articles of golfers doing that. But what you'll also note is slope switches are stiff. They're hard to move, and they're designed to be hard to move because it's got to be a significant movement to make sure that slope is on or off. You don't want it switching on itself during the round. So yeah, it's a really good question, and it's all to do with conformance.
And talk a little bit more, Gavin, about the data that amateurs can get from, all this information that's coming in, that you can process on your, you can look on your, what, on your laptop or your phone. What kind of data are they getting from their own shots, from these tracking devices, these tags, and how can it improve an amateur's game?
Yeah, so the way we'll do this is effectively we capture every shot position you have, and we can then link them up to your score. And from that, we'll get distances, and we use it to overlay on our course mapping. Sounds complicated, but it's really a 4 second processing on the app. And from that, we then break the game down into tee shots, approaches, short game, putting, and scoring. And we can start to say, hey, look at your tee shots. You're not driving the ball quite as far. So, hey, should you look at upgrading your driver? Should you go for a fitting? You start to work through the game and you start to look for small things. So, we get lots of users come and say, hey, my approach play has been great the last month. I'm scoring better. And you go, well, actually, you're driving the ball into the fairway, which is allowing you to hit better shots. So, it's understanding your own game and thus, showing you what you do well and showing you where you can improve. And maybe that improvement is decision making that you do, or maybe it's a technical issue. And hey, you should really go and see a PGA pro to improve that technical aspect. But it's a whole level of data. It's fascinating for golfers. We see golfers come and spend 30, 40 minutes at a time poring through their data. If they've been off and played and had an experience playing some amazing golf courses, it's also a record of that. You can always go back and look and see your overlaid maps of that round and see how you played and relive that experience. So there's many things you can do with the data, that just adds to the whole experience of golf.
And what about the interactive features with this technology?
Yeah, so there's a number of elements. So again, we allow you to go and host competitions similar to fantasy football. You can, if you a bunch of your friends have ShotScope, you can create some competitions. So, we all have friends that we don't live close to and don't get to play golf with anymore, but you can compete with them on the system. you can connect with your golf coach so you can pass them the data, or it could be that you just pass the pro at your golf club the data, and maybe they don't instruct you, but you're helping them learn about how golfers play their course for course setup, course redesigns. There's many different elements of the system that you can go and engage with others as well, which is great.
I think it does everything, shot, scope, but talk back. Maybe that's for a future application, right?
It's funny, we like, being Scottish, we love to play golf quickly. That's the whole thing. You fall off a green onto the next tee. We want to try and make golf as quick. So, even though somebody might be listening and say, well, that sounds complicated, the technology's all been designed to not slow the game down. We don't want it to take away from playing the game. We just want to enhance effectively the next time you play.
You Scots go out there in what, under 3 hours, pretty much
That
for
that's the
18?
aim. It doesn't always work. We like to say it does, but the aim is 3 hours. Yeah.
I love it. Well, Gavin, it's been a pleasure. You can get these ShotScope products online at shopscope.com, or you can go to Dick's Sporting Goods. You can go to Golf Galaxy, PGA Superstores, Golf Specialty Stores. Really a pleasure talking to you. Continued success. And last question. Just what's the best part of your job?
Oh, that's a good question. We've got a phenomenal team at ShotScope, that are great to work with. But I think the thing that I enjoy the most is the variety. So I spend a lot of time out in the US, and it could be radio interviews or appearances. It could be, yesterday we were presenting at Southern Cal's Teaching Summit, working with coaches. Sometimes we all go and host users at courses to play with them. It's probably the variety. And like I said earlier, I didn't think when I stopped playing that I would be able to partake in the industry or work within golf like this. So it's kind of, yeah, it's everything I look forward to. And it doesn't really feel like work, which is probably the key going forward. So very fortunate in that aspect.
You definitely have a passion for it. Gavin Deere, the Chief Commercial Officer for ShotScope, thanks so much for being on Sports Interview.
Thanks, really appreciate it.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and the World Long Drive Championship presented by Club Champion takes place this week at Bobby Jones Golf Course in Atlanta, Georgia. And joining me now to talk about it is Zane Smith, VP of Business Operation for GF Sports and Entertainment. Hey, Zane, welcome to Sports Interview.
Thanks, Anne. I really appreciate you having me. It means a lot leading into our world championship this year down here at Bobby Jones. The stage is just about set here. Just a gorgeous, gorgeous few days lined up here, and we're absolutely looking forward to it.
Well, give me the history of how GF Sports and Entertainment came to host this championship.
Yeah, so GF Sports Entertainment was founded actually in New York back in 2015. And our first two properties that we acquired were by the US from the USTA in two 250 level ATP tennis tournaments, formerly the New York Open, which is now in Dallas, thriving tournament, the Dallas Open, and also the Atlanta Open. So we primarily focus on niche sports. We own a team in the National Lacrosse League that plays at the Coliseum there on Long Island, the New York Riptide. And we're looking to expand, and we're looking to do more and grow. And we really wanted to use our boots on the ground focus here in Atlanta. And the opportunity came about through the Golf Channel and NBC Universal to acquire the property of World Long Drive. So we officially acquired it back in June of last year, 2022. And this is our first year running the tour. So one of the big things we were focusing on was, how can we use all of our strengths? We have an office here in Atlanta. We have an office in New York. So a lot of our staff in New York works on this property and is down here in Atlanta this week. And it was just a no-brainer to have it at the Bobby Jones Golf Course here.
Well, it sounds great. I know the World Long Drive Championship. I mean, that whole sport seems to be growing in terms of interest, not only with the competitors, but with the audience. I know the Golf Channel will still be broadcasting the championship, right? But I mean, What's behind the growth of watching men and women just crush the ball off the tee to distances that just are, seem unbelievable?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, to be honest, it's really until you come and see it, or if you know, if you see an Instagram video or something of that nature, you really almost can't believe what you're seeing. You know, the average golfer goes out there, and if they hit one 300 yards, that's considered probably their longest drive of their life. But you know, we'll have some athletes out here. Even the women will hit it over 350 yards this week. The men could come close to hitting it 450 yards. So I think it's really the ability to appreciate the level of athleticism that it takes for both the men and the women, and just evolving sports. And you know, it's a much shorter time frame in for a player to become a decent or even very good long driver. A much shorter time frame than becoming a professional golfer. So I think it's a path for someone to become a professional golfer, professional long driver, and not having the full golf background, if that makes sense.
Sure, absolutely. And some people are just so good off the tee, but you know, they struggle with other aspects of the golf game, short game, putting. Well, everybody really, it's so hard for any, even the top pros to get it all going perfectly.
Oh yeah.
At the same time, that's the biggest challenge of golf, right? Physically and mentally, it's just probably the hardest sport in the world. But if you have talent and can hit the ball long, then what goes into training? So say somebody has the talent, you know, to just hit the ball long off the tee. What goes into getting them to the point where they can compete in this World Long Drive Championship?
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest thing and probably the most important thing is being fitted with the right equipment. So thankfully, you know, Club Champion has locations all around the United States and now even into Canada through Tour Experience Golf. So first and foremost, being fit with the right equipment is just so important. If you go out there with just any old club, you know, you're going to struggle. You might be missing left or missing right. So having the right equipment is the first thing. Second thing is just your training. It's more than just golf. It's, you know, you have to be strong. You have to have the athleticism, and you have to be able to train and work for it. So having those two items leads you into the third one, which is being able to, you know how to swing as a long driver. It's a much different golf swing than just traditional golf. You know, it's really learning how to use your lower body separately to your upper body. They almost have to work in separate so you can create that lag to get that full speed. So knowing how to move your body the right way and knowing how to use the force of the ground in order to create a lot more speed, it's very important. So there's actually a lot more that goes into it than the viewer might think. So it's pretty incredible stuff what these athletes can do.
And so there are 150 world-class long drivers. They're going to be teeing it up. Talk a little bit about the format and the various divisions.
Yeah, so the open division, so all three formats would be the same. It starts off with a preliminary round robin format. So each there's groups of 16 hitters. So the open division will have 8 groups of 16 hitters. The seniors and the women's will each have 2 groups of 16 hitters. It's all a round robin format. So you will face each of the other 15 hitters in every round. You'll face them each once. So it's an equal and fair playing field, if that makes sense. So you get 5 sets of 6 balls apiece. Whoever comes in first with the longest drive will get 200 points. Second will get 100. Third will get 50. Fourth will get 25. And if you don't hit the grid, you get 0 points. So based on how many points you get in your 5 sets determines if you advance to the next round or not. So we take 8 of the top 6, 8 of the 16 in each round to advance to the next round. So it's basically the field gets cut in half after each round.
Okay. And so who are some of the personalities who will be competing?
Oh, yeah. So we've been very lucky to work with our international affiliates. We have over a dozen international affiliates, anywhere from Japan, Australia, South Korea, Europe. I mean, so many countries. So we've been blessed with the sorts of, you know, Martin Borgmeier, who's the reigning world champion. He has a very large social media presence. He won the world championship last year in Mesquite, Nevada. Kyle Berkshire is a 2-time world champion with he has a very large social media following. On the women's side, you know, we have the likes of Phyllis Mehdi, who is multi-time world champion, actually lives down here in Atlanta now and works at a driving range here. Sandra Karlberg is a 6-time world champion from Sweden. So again, another one of our international affiliates. So we really have an unbelievable field here this week with, you know, just dozens and dozens of international competitors, really, you know, encapsulating the true nature of World Long Drive. So it's going to be fantastic week.
Well, let's go back and some of these names you mentioned. So the defending world champion in the men's, Martin Borgmeier, ranked number two, apparently went viral when he hit a 300-plus yard drive with his putter.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. These guys are unbelievable. I mean, it you know, the drivers that they actually use probably have less loft than your putter. You know, a lot of these guys this week might be playing less loft because it's going to be downwind off the left. So they want a little bit less loft just because that wind is going to be helping it up more. So, you know, he could be playing, you know, these guys could be playing a driver that's only 2.5 degrees of loft, and the typical putter is about 3 degrees. So it's the same. It's looking down at it, it almost looks the same as the face of his driver, oddly enough.
Unbelievable. When I'm looking at like the yardage, so Bryce Verplank has the longest drive of the year in the men's, 489 yards. And the women, you've mentioned Phyllis Mede, four-time world champion, ranked number one, world record holder for longest drive in a women's competition, 414 yards. Now, for people who are listening to the show and maybe, you know, aren't familiar, what the average drive on the LPGA, the women's professional golf circuit, is, what would you say, like maybe 250, 260 average?
Yeah, it could be a little bit longer than that. It's tough to tell. But a lot of the longest drives that we see on tour are dependent on you know, course conditions and where we are in the world. So Bryce's drive was in LaSalle, Colorado, which is, you know, at elevation, and the wind does help that for sure. But Bryce is a two-time champion this year. He's probably one of the front runners to win this week. He's an unbelievable talent. Phyllis, you know, this is right in her backyard. I mean, especially downwind, you know, she's going to be so tough to beat. It's really, they're both, you know, those are two fantastic competitors.
Right. And so on the PGA Tour, what's the average drive?
That's tough to tell. I think Rory McIlroy led the tour last year in driving distance. I think he was about 330 to 340 yards.
All right. So three, say, and that's average, right? That's a lot. Yeah. That's a long way. But here's Bryce Verplank, has the longest drive of the year, 489. So that's over 100 yards longer than Rory McIlroy's average, which is crazy. But I mean, some of these people, and then there's an Air Force veteran who's ranked number 12.
Yes, Brandon Flynn. I mean, he's actually on the driving range right now with the PGA Hope charity.
Oh, wow.
They're doing a great clinic right now for adaptive golf here at Bobby Jones. They have a great adaptive golf clinic, which actually PGA Hope introduces golf to military veterans. So we have two military veterans up there on the range right now. Jeff Schmuck, who was in the Marines, and Brandon, again, who is a military veteran as well. So, they're both good competitors.
I did a lot of work to help promote the U.S. Adaptive Golf Alliance. So I'm really, it's just so thrilled that, you know, the adaptive golfers have been able, they have their own tournament now that the USGA has organized for them. They have a lot of other tournaments, but a huge championship. And now with the this world, you know, long drive championship, it's amazing to see these adaptive golfers hit the ball so long, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really unbelievable, you know, yeah, you can't even, I mean, you have to give them credit. I mean, what they do is so impressive, you know, their will to want to get out there and to want to learn how to golf and, you know, overcoming so many things. It's really incredible.
So I remember there's a bunch of names here going back. Maurice Allen's been around for a while. In fact, I see him playing in a lot of, you know, celebrity tournaments. He's an Atlanta resident. He and Phyllis Mede are a couple. Yep. And that must be fun for them to cheer each other on, right? I mean, to see, what are they? Are they, I don't know if they're married, but, you know, the husband, wife, or boyfriend, girlfriend team, that's a nice story angle.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, Maurice, he's another former world champion. You know, he's a great ambassador of the sport of not only long drive, but golf in general. I mean, what he does for underserved communities and minorities, it's really unbelievable. He has a great partnership with the Boys and Girls Club of America, where he will enter a city before an event and go to the Boys and Girls Club of America to help promote golf and promote sports and, you know, talk to kids and really give them a good direction in life and things to look forward to.
Getting back to the equipment, Zane, so you're talking about how each golfer has to be fitted for the driver that's going to give them the longest distance. I would think, you know, it has to have a longer shaft than most. I mean, that's just, you know, my guess. And then their club, what's the club head speed and the ball speed? What are we talking about in those departments?
Yeah, so our long drivers, most of them use a 48-inch driver, which most players on tour use about a 45 or 45 and a half inch driver on the PGA Tour there. So they are a little bit longer, a couple inches longer. But all of the heads for the drivers that use are used in competition are conforming to the USGA conforming list. So they are legal. You could use any of the driver heads in a PGA Tour event. But as far as the club head speed, I mean, it's really unbelievable. I think the record is about 169.6 miles an hour by Seb Twidell, who's one of our competitors. We'll see club head speeds this week, about 160 to 165. I think anything above that would be surprising. But the club head speed is about 165 for the men would be on the high side.
Wow. And what about the women? Do you know what their average club head speed is?
Women, yeah, they're up about 125 mile an hour range. If they got up to 130, that would be very high for the women. But yeah, I mean, that's, I can't be quoted on it, but I believe that's higher than PGA Tour average. So
yeah, I would think.
The women are very fast and very impressive.
And, you know, club head speed equals distance. And so you have to have incredible club head speed to get that ball out there. And I understand the Bridgestone E9 golf ball is the official ball of the World Long Drive. And they have a lab right there in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, they're right down the street in Covington. I mean, a lot of their team will be out here this week to check it out. But that ball was actually specifically made for World Long Drive last summer. So the team there is unbelievable. We can't really thank them enough. So, you know, the ball this week, it'll be the Bridgestone E9 long drive ball. The players love it. We've dug into the data, and the average drives this year with the E9 long drive ball are longer and actually straighter than years in the past. So it's a fantastic ball.
I love Bridgestone overall, the balls that they put out there for amateur golfers, and interesting that it is its own separate ball just for this long drive competition, I guess.
Bridgestone likes to say that it's a ball that you might pull out on, you know, the par five long drive hole of a charity outing, but you'll keep playing it the whole round because it's actually a very good, very good ball.
Oh, neat. I'll have to try it. Definitely. So this is your first golf property, this long drive competition?
Yes, this is the first golf property that we've gotten into. Yep.
And so far, what's the interest been like?
It's really been unbelievable. I mean, from the time we announced back in January until today here in, you know, in October, it's been about almost exactly 10 months. And just the relationship that we've been able to build with the players, you know, I mean, I must get a dozen players a week that tell me, I have a perfect location for an event in my area. I would love to be able to host an event. So just the outright support from the players and their ability and their want to grow the game and to bring more local, smaller sized events for people to be able to get into the sport of long drive has really just been overwhelming. I mean, we are so thankful for the players and everything that they do for us.
So GF Sports Entertainment, is that an equity firm basically?
Yeah. So our parent company is called GF Capital Management. They're based out of New York. They're a private investment firm where they do a lot of different things from real estate management to they have a family office where, you know, small business owners go and they manage all of their business side of things. But they also were, you know, involved with brands like Jonathan Adler, Oscar De La Renta, the Blue Man Group, things of that nature. And then in 2015, they started GF Sports and Entertainment.
So being kind of on the pulse of, you know, these tennis and golf and lacrosse teams and events, would you say the business of sports is healthy at this point, or is it thriving, or, you know, what's the crystal ball look like?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing that you know, we're very proud of is our complete ownership of the intellectual property of the World Long Drive Tour, not being restrained to, you know, just becoming a team in a league. You know, we have the full ability to make, you know, whether it's a rule change or adding events or subtracting events, moving them from location to location has really been, you know, it's really freeing and it's really incredible. So being able to own the full on tour has really just been an advantage for us. So yeah, I mean, the business, you know, business of sports is in such a fantastic spot. You look at what they're doing in pickleball, it's really unbelievable. You know, being able to convert very good high level tennis players into professional pickleball players is really unbelievable. So I believe, you know, the business of sport is in a very good spot.
Maybe that's your next move. You guys getting into the pickleball arena.
I can't comment too much, but yeah, we've definitely evaluated it at length for sure.
And since you have, you know, control of the full on tour now, so this is the championship. So how many events are, do you guys, I guess, organize to lead up to the championship?
Yeah. So this is our 10th tour event. We've had eight of our regular level tour events. We had one of our majors back in Kingsport, Tennessee, back at the end of August that was streamed on, it was broadcasted on the Golf Channel. And now this is our 10th one here in Atlanta, Georgia. So we've been everywhere from Mesquite, Nevada to LaSalle, Colorado, Portland, Connecticut, you name it. I mean, Memphis, Tennessee, we've been up into Canada. We've been all over the place. So we really try to branch out and go to as many new locations as possible to be able to introduce people to the sport of long drive. But we've also expanded our international footprint, where we've created sanctioned events for people to be able to compete for world ranking points internationally. So we've had internationally sanctioned events in Australia this year, Europe, just several countries, which we're really proud of. And we're really looking forward to expanding more in the future.
So this is one of many events that your company actually organizes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, this is
in the golf, in the long drive space.
Yep. 365 days a year, we're planning events. And, you know, I'm very much in the midst of planning the schedule for next year. So that's, you know, starting Monday at 8 a.m., that's going to be the number one focus for me.
And this event pays a purse of $75,000 for men, $25,000 for women, and $15,000 for seniors. I'm sure the women want some equal pay here. Any rumblings about that?
You know, we've gotten great support from our women's division. All season long, actually, the additional prize money that was added to the purses was equal. So the women have had equally added amounts of prize money to their purses all season long to this point. So yes, there's definitely been some rumblings, and we're really pushing to grow that women's division to get 32 competitors in the future, and then even 64. And I hope at some point in the future we can match it to 128 like we have in the open division now.
Wow, 128 guys, huh?
Yes. Yep. We get tons of support.
And how many women?
So we have 27 women competing this week.
Okay. Well, so it's growing. More and more women are into it. They're learning about the opportunities to compete, not only in this event, but all these other tournaments you're talking about. So I just think it's, you know, the sky's the limit. I mean, this is, it's really grown just in the last couple of years, and well, continued success. It just sounds like, you know, GF Sports and Entertainment, that you all are kind of attach yourselves to the right venues and the right sports. And, you know, it sounds like it's all going very well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me today. I really appreciate it. It means a lot.
Zane Smith, VP of Business Operation for GF Sports and Entertainment. Thanks so much. My thanks to Zane Smith, to Gavin Deere, to Mike Goodsell in production. As Albert Einstein once said, peace cannot be kept by force. It can only be achieved by understanding. Pray for peace, be kind, be safe, and I will talk to you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Anne McGorry.